This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we will discuss media coverage of the Supreme Court's latest assault on the Voting Rights Act. In a recent piece in The Guardian, our next guest, David Daly, writes, in a 6-3 party line decision in Calais versus Louisiana, based on politics, not law, the U.S. Supreme Court, in effect, erased the remaining provisions of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which had protected minority voters against racial gerrymandering and vote dilution. They invited Republican state legislators to draw new congressional maps that will probably create a solid red South, the largest reduction in black political representation since the death of Reconstruction, a loss of as many as 19 seats in the U.S. House and nearly 200 state legislative seats nationwide, and dramatically remake the balance of power in favor of Republicans. David Daly is senior fellow at Fair Vote and author of the books Anti-Democratic, Inside the Far Right's 50-Year Plot to Control American Elections, and Rat-Effed, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count. He's former editor-in-chief of Salon. Hi, David. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Always a pleasure, Rose. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, David. So much is happening so quickly, it's hard to keep track of it all. But on a very basic level, what do you think is missing from the discussion about the importance of what the Supreme Court recently decided? How should we be thinking about this?
I think we need to understand that this Supreme Court is doing politics and not law, that there is a 6-3 Republican supermajority on this court that has been carefully devised and built over decades now, the result of very careful planning, that the Chief Justice, John Roberts, has very carefully presented himself to the nation as an umpire, somebody who's simply calling balls and strikes, who continues to insist that the court's decisions are not political. And yet, we can look at what this court has done to the Voting Rights Act over the course of the last dozen years, and we can see what the very obvious political and representational consequences have been. The court, just like it did in Shelby County versus Holder when it ended preclearance, the most important enforcement mechanism of the Voting Rights Act back in 2013, insisted that there was simply no need for this anymore because things had changed in the South. And it's that very afternoon that Texas enacts its draconian voter ID bill. Immediately afterwards, we see Mississippi and North Carolina and Alabama and other states enact laws that they would not have been able to do in the past. So perhaps things had not changed as much as the Chief Justice suggested. And now in the Calais case, a decision by Samuel Alito, we see that they are declaring that, you know, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act no longer necessary, essentially, and that immediately, we see Florida anticipating this decision and remapping. We see Tennessee, Alabama, Louisiana, South Carolina sprinting to eviscerate remaining black districts. So this court is gaslighting us, and we don't have to believe it. We can believe what we see with our own two eyes.
What do you think of that argument that this is no longer needed?
Gosh, you know, I think that it's clearly still needed because as soon as, you know, back in the Shelby County case in 2013, Justice Ginsburg famously said that, you know, those who believe that the work here has been done and that the Voting Rights Act is no longer needed are essentially throwing away their umbrella in a rainstorm because they're not getting wet, that the rain was still falling. It was the umbrella that was protecting you and keeping you dry. And, you know, I think she was obviously right about that, as we, immediately see in the days after Shelby, with the new laws that were passed in all of those states and localities that had previously been unable to make changes to their election laws without permission from the Justice Department. And now we're watching the exact same thing. We are watching the wholesale erasure of Black political power across the South in the name of a colorblind constitution, in the name of race neutrality. We are watching Black political representation disappear in Alabama, in Louisiana, in South Carolina, in Tennessee. We're going to see about 19 seats between this cycle and the next cycle be, taken off the board entirely. This is going to have a huge effect in state legislatures. It's been estimated about 200 state legislative seats currently held by Black members are going to disappear, and it's going to have an untold effect at the local level. School boards, local judges, city and town councils, mayor races in places and cities that are too small to maybe even have their own newspaper these days, let alone garner the attention of the national press. What's going to happen to district lines and representation in all of these places because of this court's blinkered decision, I think is devastating.
Is anything left of the Voting Rights Act at this point?
Well, what the court has done, I think, quite compellingly is they've left it standing while simply scribbling over it. They have simply made many of these sections simply too difficult to actually enact. So Justice Alito would say, well, I haven't, nullified the Voting Rights Act at all. But in reality, what he has done is he has said he has removed protections against racial gerrymandering if a lawmaker can simply say, well, I wasn't doing a partisan I wasn't doing a racial gerrymander. I was doing a partisan gerrymander. I was doing this to screw over Democrats. I wasn't doing this to hurt Black political power. And unless if you can prove it, 120%, what the intent of this lawmaker was, you cannot essentially use these protections anymore. They have given racist lawmakers across the South a get out of jail free card. They've handed them a card that says, if you simply say you're doing a partisan gerrymander, then that's just fine. You can get away with doing a racial gerrymander.
There's so much happening right now. The GOP-controlled legislature could eliminate one or both in a state where roughly 30% of the population is Black. According to PBS, the ruling encouraged Republicans in Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina, and Tennessee to consider eliminating four Democratic districts, three represented by Black lawmakers. Florida has a new map meant to cost Democrats four of their eight seats out of 28. Given that so much is happening right now, David, what else do we need to know? The other thing is I've seen white Republicans come out and blatantly say, yes, this is partisan.
Yes, because that's what the Supreme Court has essentially told them to say. It's obvious what they're doing, right? The consequences of this are going to be clear. But they're going to be able to get away with it. We are heading into an all-out redistricting Armageddon. And it's going to start with what has happened in the Calais case, on top of the mid-decade gerrymanders that had been ongoing ever since Donald Trump called Texas a year ago and said, give me five more seats. So if you start to do the math on this, right, you know, Texas takes those five Democratic seats. California retaliates by taking five Republican seats. Ohio takes two Democratic seats. North Carolina and Missouri take one apiece. Virginia tried to retaliate there with four seats. Virginia's state Supreme Court struck that down. So that left Republicans up about four in the mid-decade redistricting games. And then Calais comes down. And what we see, Republicans eviscerating the seat in Memphis, Tennessee, going after a Jim Clyburn seat in South Carolina, one, maybe two of the black seats in Louisiana, one, maybe two in Alabama. Florida was ready with those four seats. You begin to see, you know, another 9, 10, 11 seats heading from the Democratic Party towards the Republicans on top of the four that they netted out through mid-decade redistricting, on top of the three that they currently have an advantage in Congress by. And, you know, it begins to complicate the road that Democrats face in 2026 as they try to take back the House. I imagine that they are still favored, but it's certainly a much harder road than it was 2 weeks ago.
We're speaking with David Daley, senior fellow at Fair Vote and author of the book Rat F'd, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count. He has been writing about gerrymandering for so long, far before many in the media were talking about this. If you have any questions for David in our remaining eight or so minutes, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. David, it has really been devastating to hear civil rights activists respond to what's going on. We had an amazing civil rights activist, Dr. Flonzi Brown Wright, on the show. She's in her mid-80s. She is still fighting the fight. She lives in Mississippi. You can only imagine what she has gone through. So I want to make sure we talk about how this is really going to affect Black communities. I was reading this interesting piece by the Black Appalachian Coalition, and they write, for years, America has trained people to think gerrymandering as some abstract political sport, a chess match between Democrats and Republicans, fought through maps, court cases, and cable news graphics. The conversation is almost always flattened into numbers, districts gained, seats lost, margins protected. But Black communities understand something this country refuses to say plainly. When political power is stripped from Black people, the damage never stays political for long. It spreads into the water, into the hospitals, into the schools, the air, in the conditions people are forced to survive inside. That is why what is happening across the South cannot be reduced to, quote, redistricting. The maps being drawn are not simply about preserving Republican control. They're about preserving a governing structure where Black communities can be seen, extracted from, celebrated symbolically, and still denied the political power necessary to materially shape the conditions of their lives. Can you talk about this? This is such an important point that I think is being missed in a lot of the conversations.
No, it's powerful and I think entirely correct. When these communities are cracked and packed and sliced and diced, you lose seats at the table. You lose political power. This is an attack on Black political representation. It is an attack on Black political power. And I think what is so striking when you go through these cases or when you look at the examples, I mean, I think about Flint, Michigan, in the early 2010s, in which the governor of Michigan uses an emergency manager provision to take control of the city of Flint. The people of Michigan say no to this through a statewide initiative. But because the legislature is so gerrymandered, the legislature goes ahead and overrides that citizen veto, puts the emergency manager provision back in place. The Flint emergency manager is reinstated. He switches the water supply in Flint to the Flint River, and the environmental and health disaster that ensued can be traced back in many ways to gerrymandering. This case, the Calais case, in many ways has its roots in a case called Mobile v. Bolden that was decided by the court back in 1979, 1980, over two sessions. And in that case, the court says that you have to prove that laws had a racial intent on top of having a racial effect, if you wanted to use essentially the Voting Rights Act or the Reconstruction Amendments to try and bring about change. And it was set in Mobile, Alabama, and it overturned a decision by a local judge who, when this case came to him having to do with how the lines were drawn in Mobile, Alabama, for the city council, he said, well, you know, I'm going to go out and I'm going to walk these lines. And this, you know, older white judge goes out and he walks the district lines and he looks at the black schools and the white schools. He looks at the sidewalks and the parks and the roads in all of these areas. And he says, well, I understand what's happening here. This is not just a question about where these lines are. It's a question about how resources flow inside these districts, right, where they flow and where they don't. Right. And so when district lines change, all of this moves as well. And I think that's right. In, you know, simply to reduce this to a partisan political game, while important and while the lens that might be most obvious to people, it is not the only way of looking at this.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, are you going to have expanded Medicaid in your state? Will you have clean water in your neighborhood? So much. We have just time for one more question, David, just briefly. You've been on our show many times talking about how the Democrats have really failed on this issue. And we should say, over the years, Democrats have introduced bills to ban partisan gerrymandering. All Democrats voted for this. All Republicans voted against it. That context needs to be included. But in your book, Rat Effed, you do point out that Southern Democrats did approach people like Nancy Pelosi years ago to talk about gerrymandering, and they were not taken seriously. So can you provide that context for us? We only have a couple minutes, but, you know, how we got to this place.
You know, we got to this place, you know, Democrats and those working on good government had tried to, you know, change gerrymandering laws and ban this, you know, a long time ago. Arizona in 2000 with the first commission, at 2010 California's commission, 2010, you know, Florida state constitution puts in tough language on partisan gerrymandering. But in 2010, something else happened. It's a Republican strategy called Red Map. It's the Redistricting Majority Project. And Republicans essentially use Barack Obama's election to try to plot a path back to power. And they recognize 2010 being a census year and that redistricting follows a census. And that if they could win state legislatures across the country, they could use that to remap the nation. And that was, you know, quite successful in, you know, in Florida, in North Carolina, Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, all kinds of states around the country in which these gerrymandered Republican legislatures have been, you know, largely in power ever since. Democrats in 2021 had a trifecta. They were not able to break the filibuster in the Senate in order to move these protections. The Supreme Court has been steadily eroding the ability of courts to do anything about this. So we are, you know, now in a position in which this is going to become a real disaster nationwide, because Democrats aren't going to stand still now. Democrats are going to fight back. They can't do much this year, but in 2028, they will go after the commissions in New York and Colorado, maybe in New Jersey, Washington State. You might even see another initiative in California. And I imagine Republicans will go after the additional seats that they can't get this cycle, thanks to the Calais decision, Georgia, Texas, Florida, Missouri, maybe elsewhere. They'll go back into Indiana, Kentucky, Kansas. We are going to be looking at a map in 2028 that is largely red delegations from red states, blue delegations from blue states. We've had this in this country before. Back then, we called it the Union and the Confederacy.
And we just got some news that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a Democrat from Florida, will run in a majority black district after the GOP eliminated her seat under a newly drawn congressional map, stoking tensions with black Democrats. So there's also this, another mess that has been created by all of this. Unfortunately, we're out of time, David, but we'd love to have you back to continue this important conversation. David Daley is senior fellow at Fair Vote, author of Anti-Democratic and Rat-F'd, Why Your Vote Doesn't Count. Thank you so much, David.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your Calls Media Roundtable.